Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Neil Miller, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies, and welcome to our big fat year-end special, also known as the Big Fat Neil's Sick. So let's try and get through this special.
Yeah, well, that's okay. It's the winter time, and it's unseasonably cold.
It is, post-Christmas.
Yeah, unseasonably cold where you are.
Yeah, usually we take this week off after Christmas, don't we?
We have in the past, but you know what? We're both home.
We were both big winners. We stayed home.
Yeah,
it was so excellent.
But it's our post Christmas show. Did you have a good Christmas?
I did. I was a little sick, and you know, it's still lingering. As I told you earlier, I had a coughing fit this morning and ended up looking in the mirror, and my eyes were red, and I thought I was turning into some sort of swan princess.
Yeah,
and then the vision turned quickly to me dancing in the middle of the Metropolitan stage with my belly hanging out, and it was bad.
I would have paid money to see that, I swear.
Yeah, so Natalie Portman and I, for a minute, basically I look like what Natalie Portman will look like if she gets both bearded and pregnant.
Yeah, well, she is pregnant.
She's already halfway there.
And then she needs a beard, and I don't know what she's going to do with she's got to find somebody to protect her baby and hide it.
Yeah.
Or the Sith will come after her.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, here's how you can get a hold of Fat Guys at the Movies. You can go over to fatguysatthemovies.com, now currently alive, fatguysatthemovies.com. You can go to iTunes.
You know something that I don't?
You can search Fat Guys at the Movies on iTunes. You can email us, fatguysatfilmschoolrejects.com, or leave us a voicemail, area code 740-205-6456. You can get us on Twitter. You probably know that already. And Facebook, where you can also search Fat Guys. Basically, if you go to any website that you use and search Fat Guys the Movies, we're probably there somewhere.
Maybe not every website. I think if you type in Fat Guys at the Movies on certain websites, you will get something alarmingly different than this radio program podcast.
I don't know. Alarmingly different?
Yeah, I've been solicited before. So
slightly off is what I would say.
Yes.
Well, anyway, we've got a few movies to talk about this week, and then we're going to do our big year-end recap where we talk about our best and worst of the year. Do we want to jump right in, or do we want to play the voicemail? I know we got a voicemail.
We do have a voicemail from longtime listener Jeff Hall, we'll go ahead and we're going to play that in the third segment.
Oh, okay. We'll jump into the reviews.
Sure.
First up is The King's Speech, which went into theaters over the weekend and is expanding over the next couple of weeks. In which,
as are we and Natalie Portman.
Yeah, in which Colin Firth plays King George VI, who has to master his stutter before he's able to address the nation on the eve of World War II.
My husband has seen everyone.
Insert them into your mouth. Enunciate.
He hasn't seen me. I can cure your husband, but I need total trust.
What was your earliest memory?
I'm not here to discuss personal matters.
Well, why are you here then?
Because I bloody well stammer!
But do you know any jokes?
Timing isn't my strong suit.
Your methods were unorthodox and controversial.
It's your peculiar. I take that as a compliment.
Can I just say, when you read that, I thought it was a very ironic twist that you stuttered through it.
Well, someone wrote Colin Farrell in the notes.
Did I write Cal? Oh, that would have been fun.
So that'll bring about a stutter when you're like, what? Colin Farrell wasn't in this movie.
Colin Farrell. That would be great, though. I would love to see a King's Speech version with Colin Farrell.
With him playing the stuttering king?
Yeah.
What I find about this movie that's interesting is the story it tells. You know, I did not know very much about the last King of England, you know, the most recent King of England. This is the guy who was Elizabeth's father.
Yeah, and she shows up, but she's not played by Helen Mirren.
Right, and she looks nothing like Kate Blanchett, who is Elizabeth before that. They all look the same, you know, because they've been inbreeding since.
Well, the Elizabeth, the Elizabeth played was a different Elizabeth, Elizabeth I.
Yeah, but it's all the same family.
Yeah, virtually the same person when you get down to the genetics of the whole thing.
Yeah, oh yeah. It's very creepy when you think about it. I apologize to any of our British listeners, all one of you. But
no,
the royal family thing, the bloodline thing is a little weird.
Yeah.
You know, They've been keeping it in the family a little too closely for the last couple hundred years.
I mean, how would you like that? You know, if you will, I mean, because you know, being just poor dumb Americans, we can marry whoever we want to, but no one's telling us who we have to marry. But how would you like that to be like? No, not only am I telling you who you have to marry, but it's your cousin.
I don't know though. I saw.
What are you going to be like? My cousin's pretty hot. I'd be okay with that.
I saw the, you know, the what's her name, Kate, that Prince Edward's going to marry.
Oh, she's a looker.
I wouldn't be too, you know, sad about that. I guess if I were him. I mean, clearly, I'm a taken man, so I have
nothing to say about that. But if I were him,
I wouldn't be sad at all.
Well, but I mean, that's not. They've kind of moved away from a lot of that arranged stuff because wasn't like even Diana, his mom. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about British royalty, but as I understand, it was a little, let's just say, out of the box,
right?
For
well,
Charles,
you know, they're moving
to marry
into modern times.
Yeah, I mean, she's not like it's not you know it's one of those things. It's she only shared like 10% of his genome or something like that, and they're like, oh, we can't have that. That's scandal.
Oh boy,
I'm gonna get the people that love Diana after me now.
You are, man. It's too soon. Anyway, let's talk about this
like
movie a little bit. Did you see? You saw this movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
What did you think?
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's one of those movies. At award season, there's always a rash of movies that come out that I consider are good, but I'm kind of like shake my head when people are like best of the year. You know, where I'm like, oh, it was good, but it wasn't. I mean, it didn't blow me away, and that's my big thing. I mean, you know, Colin Firth does a good job. I thought Jeffrey Rush stole the show. I thought he was fantastic. He deserves all the accolades. And Colin Firth does a good job in it, but it does it is sort of that stock Oscar grab role. It's, you know, somebody with an impairment and they got to overcome it. And, you know, I mean, it's one step out of I Am Sam. You know what I mean? That's of that same ilk where, you know, he just has to stutter a lot. So
yeah.
That's just me being cynical.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, no, I know.
But it's a well-made movie. I mean, it's well-made.
Mm-hmm. And I agree. You know, this actually is, you know, not to spoil anything, but this is going to end up on one of my best of the year list. Yeah. Simply because it's such a finely made film. I think of all the directorial works that we've seen this year, Tom Hooper really has complete control over the style of this movie, and I think. You know, Colin Firth is great, but this really feels like this acting clinic to me, where Colin Firth is fantastic in it, and Jeffrey Rush just blows it out of the water. And to me, I haven't seen a performance like that. I mean, we're going to talk about a couple of them in the next segment, but for the most part, you know, it's hard to say that I've seen a performance that good, you know, in a supporting role. I'm tired of people talking about The Social Network. I think this movie is far better than The Social Network. It's far more interesting, far more stylish, and the performances are much better. So, yeah. You know,
I didn't think Helena Bonham Carter was, like, anything to write home about.
Yeah, but she was barely in the movie.
Whoa, hello.
Yeah, sorry.
Suddenly Satan overtakes Neil Miller's body.
You will listen to me. This movie rocks. You know, I think if you're going to see any Oscar bait movie this year, it should be this one. I say totally rocks.
I say kind of rocks. I'm going to say a little bit more on the other end of the segment, though.
Fair enough. And we are back here on Fat Guys of the Movies, coughing and wheezing our way through.
We sound like
our year-end show.
We sound like we're in the old folks' home.
We do. We sound like we're a couple of old men on a porch just talking about movies and coughing up a lung. This is just, it's bad.
We're like Fred Gwynn from Pet Cemetery. Well, yeah, come on up here and have a beer.
But we're here because we wanted to lay down our big year-end wrap-up show. And
big,
it's,
fat. Year-end wrap.
Yes. Who could forget?
Of course.
The fat.
I want to say one more thing about the King's Speech. And again, a lot of the problem with movies at the end of the year is when people go real gaga over them, I tend to get a little more cynical. You know, mm-hmm. and that happened this summer with Inception, which is, so it's not even just award films. It's, you know, Inception, people were like, oh my God, it's the most original. It's the big surprise ending. And it's so hard to do. And I'm like, well, none of those are true. I mean, it wasn't that original, and the surprise ending wasn't anything new, and it wasn't hard to follow at all, but people are going gaga over it. And so I'm like, no, it's not that, you know? And so I tend to react sometimes to over accolades. This isn't so for me, King's Speech, it's a kind of rocks. I mean, it's a good movie. It's definitely worth checking out. And like you said, it even though it feels like that award bait film, it's not as it doesn't revel in like white trash and seediness that say like The Fighter did or something like that.
Oh God, The Fighter. Don't get me started.
But the one thing I do find ironic about is the point is it's about this guy. Yes, he's the King of England. But it's not about the King of England. It's about a guy overcoming a speech impediment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he just happens
happens to be the King of England.
Yeah. And what's funny is, you know, it's like you know, it's him having to give a speech. And really, it's like, you know, you're on the eve of World War II and people are dying and they're politics. And they're like, he gives a speech. Yay. You know, and you're like, well, I understand the significance of giving a speech as the King of England, but you do kind of have to. I do sit back and I'm like, all I did was just talk on the radio.
Well, and it comes back to the historical context, mm-hmm. of it is that speech ended up being very important.
Yeah,
but without that historical context, it really was just a speech.
Yeah, and like they always have the titles at the end. I mean, I know I'm technically saying what, but it's about you know what happens in World War II. And always at the end, they're like, you know, they put the titles on the screen and they're like, well, this guy went on to do this and the bad guy got his comeuppance. And they always do that, especially at the end of a true story thing. And like for him, it's like, it was the most like soft-handed title at the end. It's like, and King George gave a lot of speeches.
He went on to talk a lot, yeah. In public.
Which, you know, for what the story's about a guy who needed to do that. And it's because he was only, radio was very relatively new then. And there's a line in there where his dad says, is like, well, you know, it used to be all you had to do was dress nice and not fall off your horse. And now with radio, you get to address the nation. So, I mean, it was a novelty back then. And it was so different to actually suddenly have to do this as royalty.
Right.
So, I mean, for the personal story, you have to approach this movie as it's a personal story about...
Well, and you... sorry. You feel good for him at the end, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You root for him, which is important, especially in any movie that's trying to win a bunch of Oscars.
Are you one of the people who... Were you upset with the fact that it got an R rating? Because I remember when it was handed an R rating, people were like, oh, my God, shouldn't be
R. It was given an R rating?
Well, yeah, because of all the swearing.
Oh, because of all the swearing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there is that rule. You get one F word, or you get, what, two F words?
Well, there's a lot of swearing in it, because the whole thing is, for the audience, who, if you haven't seen it, he's going through speech therapy. And so he's kind of sort of encouraged to just say whatever comes in his mind. And there's a couple scenes, and it's like three or four times he launches into a string of profanity.
The flurry of profanity. And some really nasty stuff, too.
Well, the British are very, very creative with their... Anyone who's seen In the Loop will know.
Oh, yeah.
But it was one of those things I'm like, because people were upset. And, I mean, that's the only stuff that would be potentially offensive. But I think, you know, if you're a parent and the kid's like, I want to see the King's Speech, for whatever reason your 12-year-old wants to see it. And you take
him, let him see it.
Let him see it.
He's going to hear worse at school.
But be aware that there's some swearing, because if you go see the movie and suddenly, and they're like, why did he, because you listen to the words, and I mean, it's not like the Aristocats or Krats. So I thought that was an interesting side note. Speaking of movies that battled the MPAA.
Oh boy.
Should we move on to the next one?
Yeah, this one is Blue Valentine, in which Michelle Williams and Ryan Gosling play a couple whose marriage is imploding.
You got any, like, talents?
Like, hidden talents?
Can you dance? You can tap dance?
Can you?
No. Here, I'll play a song and you dance. Okay. I can't really sing. I have to sing goofy in order to sing. Like, I have to sing stupid. Okay?
Okay.
You always hurt.
ones you love. One.
Just for the record, everybody, I did write the proper blurb for that movie.
Yeah, that's true. Did you get to see this?
I did.
Awesome. I've been curious about this because I saw this at Sundance, and first of all, it's not an NC-17 movie. That was kind of the big thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like an NC-17 movie. There is a very uncomfortable scene that involves sex.
There's a couple of scenes. When I watched it, I was like, I'm not surprised it got an NC-17 rating.
Right, but it's more about it being effective than it is about it being, like, raunchy.
No, it's not. Well, no, because that's the thing.
It's just uncomfortable to watch.
People say NC-17 and they think, oh, it's pornographic. I'm like, no, it's not. NC-17 just means it kind of, it just goes a little bit beyond. And there's some stuff that are triggers at the MPAA. There's two or three scenes. It's like, it's not just, like, one little bit. There's, like, three scenes that have elements that the MPAA usually will go to the NC-17 rating on.
Yeah.
If we're talking positions and acts. And mm-hmm. even though they're not graphic, I mean, like, they're not, you know, you don't see it actually happening. It's, mm-hmm. I'm not surprised it got it. Let's just put it
right.
That
way. It still doesn't feel like an NC-17 movie to me.
How many NC-17 movies have you seen? There aren't that many that are out there.
I've seen a few in my day.
There's like five.
I can't remember them. Just know that I've seen them.
It's like a Dirty Shame? Is that what it was? Mm. Was that the one with John Waters? That was NC-17.
If you've seen a John Waters movie, you've seen an NC-17 movie.
Well, no, I mean his earlier stuff definitely.
but anyway, let's come back to the real point, sure. Which is that this is another excellent movie.
I don't know about that, but
I thought the performances in this one really did carry it, and I thought that, you know, it was the performances that made everything about the movie very effective, very affecting. And it was the performances that made it so uncomfortable. It's a very uncomfortable movie to watch because you really are watching the deterioration of a relationship that, you know, as they flash back and forth between when they met, it was at one point a very happy relationship.
Yeah.
And to see it, how it's just, you know, gone so wrong.
Yeah.
Is very interesting. So, but I'm interested, what I was really interested to hear was your take, because you're married.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm single. Yes. Well, not
well, you're
single,
attached, but you're not.
I'm not married. So I have no reference.
The ball is not yet chained to your ankle, is what you're saying.
Yeah. So, and what I thought was this movie affected me, and I'm not even married. So I was curious as to what it said to someone who is married.
Well, I think it depends on what your relationship is. I mean, here's the thing. One of the things I did not like about this movie was simply because it's sort of, like I said, like with The Fighter, it revels in sort of that white trashiosity. And it is a bit, I kind of find it somewhat offensive when the Hollywood elite, and let's not mince words, Ryan Gosling and Michelle Williams are Hollywood elite. Good-looking, wealthy people who do not live like this, who then examine white trash almost on a scientific level as if they're rats in a maze, as opposed to, you know, because everyone's like, I want to get down to the nitty-gritty and I want to experience this. And I'm just like, and I'm just getting, I get tired of that. And I get really tired of that award season because there's a lot of movies that are like that, you know, as opposed to something like, say, Rabbit Hole, which is your average family, but it's not reveling in white trashiosity. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that one had a little bit of this, and the reason my wife and I watch it, and every year there's a movie I end up watching with her during award season that she hates me for, and this was it. 2 years ago it was Wendy and Lucy. Last year it was 500 Days of Summer. She hated that one, and I didn't like that one either. But the what I didn't like about it was, yeah, I mean, you're right. It is that destruction of marriage, and you get to see it sort of in retrospect of what right. the early part was, and I get that. I thought the characters were such a-holes on so many levels, and I just had no sympathy for them. And that's why I'm saying it depends on what your marriage. My wife and I have a pretty good relationship, and we're not white trash. And so we watch this, and
she doesn't beat you anymore.
Yeah, well, and then when the guy says, you know, I can drink a beer and then go to work, that's a luxury. I'm like, well, there's a lot of your problems there. Actually, we got to go to a break. We'll continue talking about Blue Valentine when we get back.
Oh, boy.
We'll be right back. miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We're talking about Blue Valentine.
We are still somehow.
Neil really liked, and
I enjoyed it. I thought it was well done. It really was the performances that made it for me, though.
I'll give you that. But you know, part of the thing is I hate Ryan Gosling. I just don't like him as an actor.
Did you watch All Good Things?
All Good Things. No, I haven't seen that.
Oh man, did you get Magnolia screeners this year? Because you should watch it. It's the worst Ryan Gosling movie ever.
Oh well, see, because I don't. You're not selling me on this now.
Because no, I need you to see it so that you can hate it along with me.
Even a movie like The Notebook, I didn't like him in The Notebook. I don't know, I mean, nothing against really The Notebook, but I just didn't like him. I didn't like him in Half Nelson. I didn't like him in Fracture, you know, mainstream movie. I just don't like Ryan Gosling. So I had a bit to overcome. And while I don't have a real problem with Michelle Williams, she does tend to gravitate at least once or twice a year. She'll gravitate towards a movie like this. Like Wendy and Lucy, I hated.
Right, but I don't think this has anything to do with Wendy and Lucy.
It really felt like the same movie. It's same kind of movie where it's like just sort of like this fly on the wall watching
them. I don't know, man. Wendy and Lucy was just abysmal bore.
Well, that's
this funny. Movie at least, you know, I felt like there was a lot of tension in this movie.
Yeah. No, there was. And I mean, you're right with the performances, cuz I saw it on Twitter. I saw it and I was tweeting out about it and I'm like, saying, you know, I hate it. My wife gets up afterwards. She goes, "That's 2 hours of my life I'm never going to get back." I mean, she was so mad at me for watching this movie.
Wow.
Yeah, she hated it.
I find it fascinating, the difference in reaction.
Yeah. But so. Again, it's not my kind of movie. And the reason I say I liken it to Wendy and Lucy is it does, to me, it really felt like that same kind of film. There was a lot more going on in Blue Valentine, but... I just didn't like the characters. And if I can't like the characters, I'm lost on the movie. It could be the best movie of the year. And that's like the same thing with Social Network. I think that's the biggest problem. I didn't like the characters. I didn't like any of them. Whether they're supposed to be likable or not, I understand you're not supposed to like them. But it was the characters and the writing that just didn't click with me. So that's I think the same thing with Blue Valentine. But it's not showing up on the worst of the year list, though.
Right, which we're going to go over here in a minute. But before that, we have to get to box office.
Box office. It's a little soft. Fockers won.
Damn. Yeah, Little Fockers was the big winner last week, and Tron and True Grit kind of fell in line after there. I thought Tron was going to give it a good run, but it just didn't. So
yeah, it's not creating the excitement, and part of it also is a lot of things with Tron in terms about and here's the thing: people are, it's Tron's a bomb. Well, not really. Tron will make
it's made $160 million worldwide. It'll continue to make more.
It'll continue because it really doesn't have. I mean, in terms of IMAX screens, it doesn't have a whole lot of competition. It doesn't mean it's going to be packing the house, but you still got the international take and then what a lot of people forget about Tron is there's all the ancillary stuff. There's toys. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the soundtrack. So there's a lot. The money is being made over Tron. It's just not Avatar size money.
Right.
So.
But Little Fockers came in at $30 million. True Grit, $24 million. I believe that. Wasn't that a record for the Coen brothers?
I think that's the biggest because the most recent biggest one they had was Burn After Reading, which was like 19.
Right. No, this is their largest opening of all time.
Which is good because it's a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I think it's capitalizing on people wanting to watch a True Grit remake as much as it is people wanting to see a Coen brothers movie.
Absolutely. So well done to them, I say. Yeah. So what do we think about this weekend? We've got nothing really major. You get all the Oscar movies. Black Swan still out there. I think Gulliver's Travels.
Gulliver's Travels technically opened on Christmas Day. So
yeah.
And it didn't do well. It's not doing well at all.
So are we looking at... I almost want to say True Grit could win, because I think Little Fockers kind of burnt.
I think Little Fockers has played out for that first week, and I think it's going to drop hard. I would not be surprised if True Grit... It's going to be one of these odd times where you're actually going to see a bunch of the award movies kind of getting in that top five.
Yeah, Black Swan. I wouldn't be surprised to see Black Swan up there. It continues Black Swan to rise. Bump.
The King's Speech is opening wide. I wouldn't be surprised if that's expanding this week. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's going to actually garner a wide up audience necessarily. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if True Grit wins the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So as it should.
Yeah.
I think Tron's not going to sink as fast as it did last week, simply because one of the things that killed a lot of the movie watching was the blizzard that kind of came through right around Christmas to the East Coast. So, you know, all the populated areas with a lot of movie theaters kind of got snowed in.
Right.
But, I wouldn't be surprised. But I think it's going to be slow. I mean, you're going to be looking at like a $12 million box office win.
I'm with you.
So either that or how do you know? The big thing was, how do you know dropped out of the top 10 in second week? Did you see that story?
I did not.
Yeah.
That's funny, though.
It was doing, it just done
that very expensive James L. Brooks movie.
Yeah, it made, it's like, I forget, there was a movie it made less than, but it was a terrible movie that nobody saw.
Oh,
it,
boy.
Then suddenly went below that, you know, so.
That's too bad. Yeah. Although not that bad, because I heard that movie sucked.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, so let's move on to the what we really want to talk about.
Yes.
The best and worst of 2010.
Are we just doing the top five?
The top, our, each top five, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, top fives. So do we want to start off with best or do we want to start off with worst?
Let's do best. Those are, it's more fun to do the worst.
Okay. Well, I feel like mine has been spoiled already because I already posted my top 10. So this is exactly the same as the top five of my top 10.
That's your own DFL. Oh, no, you know what we also have to do? We have to play a voicemail. Can we play the voicemail first?
Sure.
Okay, we're going to play a voicemail. This comes from a good friend, Jeff Hall, and he had some nice things to say about you.
This message is probably too late for this upcoming week's Christmas show. This is Jeff Hall calling from Sierra Madre, California, and I apologize I haven't had a chance to call earlier, Kevin, but I really need to talk to you about the quality of last week's show. I have never been so appalled in my life. How dare you bring in a Neil Miller impersonator, someone who actually has seen the movies every week, who had intelligent and cogent conversations about the movies? Where is Neil Miller? Who has kidnapped him? Who has replaced him? You brought in the other co-hosts over the last few weeks, and that's been great. They've all been entertaining. The shows have been wonderful. It's been a pleasure to hear them. But suddenly you bring in a Neil Miller impersonator. Bring us back either the real Neil Miller or bring us back a proper co-host. But somebody impersonating Neil Miller who says who's seen the movie, who talks intelligently about them, it is perhaps the worst, the absolute worst. It's not even worth an email. It is so bad. I'm so offended that I don't know why the show has fallen apart. You're 193 episodes into it. I would think after that long, you would have a better idea of what your audience needs. We want to hear about Jessica Alba's boobs. We want to hear, we don't want somebody pretending to be a Neil Miller who has said he has seen the movies. Please, fix this immediately, and have a Merry Christmas, Neil and Kevin. Bye-bye.
So here he is accusing you of being an imposter.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've actually seen movies and are well-informed.
Yeah.
You have disappointed Jeff Hall.
I don't really have anything to say other than, hey, Jeff, episode 87 called and it wants its joke back.
Oh, zing.
We've been using that one for a long time here in the magical suit in the sky. Oh, Neil doesn't know anything about movies.
Well,
Neil doesn't even show up to the movies. Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, 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 blah. Anyways,
I see movies all the time, man. I saw like 200 movies last year. It was insane.
At Sundance and South by Southwest was 100 of them.
Well, no, I mean, I went through a period of, you know, September, October, where I didn't see any theatrical releases, and I have since just scrambled to catch up.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling pretty strong. You know, when I put together my top 10 list, there was not anything that out there that I had not seen that I thought might have had a chance to get on there.
Yeah.
I saw everything that had a chance. So I'm feeling pretty confident that my top five is legit.
Yeah. I had to laugh at Jeff Hall's. That made me.
I just see stuff a week late, okay, Jeff? Jeez.
All right, let's move on.
Get off my back, man.
Your best of 2010, Neil.
All right, so mine has been on the internet for days, so I'm sure the 12 listeners that we have already read this over at filmschoolrejects.com.
No.
But number five would be The Good, the Bad, the Weird, which is a movie that was made in 2007 but not released in the States until this year in May.
Okay.
And just a fantastic Western and full of energy and violence and oddity. And it's one of those movies that I have watched probably 8 times this year.
It's Korean, isn't it?
It's a Korean, yep. Okay. And it has the guy who played Storm Shadow in G.I. Joe.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Now people are going to rent it.
But it is probably one of the most fun movies. The minute I got it on Blu-ray, it basically went on repeat.
And it's I've been watching it ever there, since. It's out there, yeah. It is out there.
Number four is King's Speech, which we just talked about. I just thought that I love the style of this movie. I love the performances of this movie. Of all of the end-of-the-year Oscar grab movies, this one actually feels like it was made in earnest. Ah. And so, the King's Speech. Number three is Four Lions, perhaps the funniest movie of the year.
Four Lions is good.
Oh, God. It is a comedy about terrorism. Poorly planned terrorism.
You know, you'll be happy. When I got all my award screeners, this was, in fact, the first one I watched.
Because this is, in fact, one of the best movies of the year.
Well, and it was on your recommendation. I was like, I need to see this. Because other people are talking about it. And Neil, you had just recently talked a lot about it on the show. And I'm like, well, I should watch this. This is good.
And it's one of the most consistently funny movies I've seen this year. Where it's funny. Its concept is funny. And then the film hits its comedic beats throughout the entire film. It's not just... Yeah. Funny in certain spots, or funny when, you know, Jack Black steps on one of the little people, but it's funny throughout the whole movie.
Did I miss that part of Four Lions?
No, never mind. Number two is A Prophet, which is one of the best foreign picture nominees from last year, which just released this year, which to me felt like the second coming of The Godfather. In fact, it had more of an effect on me as an adult than The Godfather did, watching it for the first time as an adult, in the way that the main character transforms from this naive kid just entering into a prison to something completely different at the end, and he has just a really intense journey. So,
when he transformed, does he make the noise?
No.
Oh, okay. That would have been cool.
Nice try, though. But it's a very, very, very well-cooked bird, as they say. Wow. You know, it does a lot of hard work up in the beginning of the movie, and it has one of the best payoffs I've seen all year. Ah, so, speaking of movies with great third acts, number one is Black Swan, and this movie I almost had a seizure watching the third act of this movie. I almost had hyperventilated.
Wow.
And because it is just, it does so much, it has such a soft... to it in the beginning, and then in the third act it just absolutely obliterates its audience.
Yeah.
And it has one of the best performances of the year from Natalie Portman. She hasn't won Best Actress. I don't know what to say to everyone, you know, what who was better than this.
You can go and knock on the door of the entire Academy.
I am. I'm gonna leave up, steaming bags of poop on their counter or on their porch.
Their counter, you're gonna sneak in their house. Put it on their house. That's their how nice passionate house. You are. That's a lot of poop.
I don't understand how anyone. I have not seen a better performance than this from Natalie Portman. I haven't seen a better performance from a lead female in years.
You're gonna have to eat a lot of granola bars to get that much poop.
Oh yeah.
For the entire Academy.
Anyway, let's do your best.
Okay, my best. Number five is 127 Hours. I love Danny Boyle. I haven't seen, actually, there's a couple of his movies I haven't seen yet. But everything else I've seen, I've loved every one of his movies. They're all unique. They're all different. And he does such a fantastic job telling the story of Aaron Ralston. And he can put you in a location for an hour and still get you out of the location. It's one of the best directed movies, I think, over the year. So yes, that one's my number five. Number four, True Grit. Again, one of my favorite directors. I love the Coen brothers as directors. I thought they did such a fantastic job living up to the original True Grit and giving a new face and a new performance to Rooster Cogburn. I thought Matty Ross was amazing in this movie. Barry Pepper, the performances were great. The cinematography was great. And just an all around solid movie. Number three is my controversial pick. Not controversial or not unexpected for me, but I don't think it's on anybody else's list. I know one other person who has this on the list, is Splice.
Interesting.
Because there's few movies this year that made me go, oh, no, that's not happening. And Splice was one of them. And I have a great love for horror and science fiction, especially when they cross paths. And this reminds me of, you know, like sort of like old school Cronenberg. And it's the kind of movies I'd see at like all night movie marathons. And it didn't do well. Nobody saw this movie, but it's just such a fantastically made film. It's so well done. Yes, it has its flaws, but the flaws play into the genre specific elements of it. And like I said, it will leave you thinking it's not going to get worse. Oh, it just did.
Interesting.
Yeah, I love Splice. Going to almost exactly the same movie. Number two is Despicable Me.
Nice.
Anyone who knows me knows I'm a big fan of animation. And part of the thing with Despicable Me is it really kind of turned me around, because when the original trailers I thought were eh. And then when you hear the concept of the movie, it's the dumbest friggin' concept you've ever heard. You're like, oh, a supervillain wants to get back on top, and then he has to take care of three orphans. And you're like, this is going to suck. Then you see the movie, and it's sweet, it's charming, it's clever, it's cute. The minions are adorable. The Blu-ray release is fantastic, has tons of special features. It's got little minion movies that are hilarious. The voice cast is great. It's a fun, sweet, adorable film, which leads me into number one, top movie of the year. Pixar has the last 3 years been the number one movie for me. And again, here it is, Toy Story 3, my favorite movie of the year. It just barely edged out Despicable Me, mainly because this franchise is 15 years old. And it's still amazing. All three movies are great. And they've all three hold up. And you rarely see, three movies in a series that are as equal as these three are, and it's such a great ending. I cry at the end. It's such a beautiful film. So yeah, Toy Story 3, my number one.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think it's funny.
I really didn't know. Toy Story 3 just didn't connect quite as much with me as other Pixar movies, which it didn't even make my top 10, which I found to be interesting. But it would be up there. It's in my top 20.
Yeah, what I thought was funny is Black Swan was my number 6.
Really? Nice. So we weren't too far off, I guess. Although you had a couple of interesting ones, I guess.
Splice. Well, Splice was the only odd one in there.
It was, maybe just what's funny is that my lady pointed this out this year in regard to my top 10. She said that you liked real movies this year, movies about reality, and movies. And it was totally spot on dissection, because I didn't have any animated stuff. I didn't have any high fantasy stuff. All my stuff was, The Good, the Bad, the Weird was a little bit out there, but
how real that movie is.
It was based in a real world. It was just kind of a weird, it was kind of a strange version of the real world.
Yeah, I get you.
But all of my movies kind of existed in reality, and none of the animated stuff kind of clicked with me this year, which I find interesting psychologically to think about. So
you're losing your soul.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Maybe I am.
All right, you want to roll into the worst of 2010?
Oh, yeah, because there's some high fantasy in here. All right, so my five worst. I have a feeling we're going to match up pretty close on these.
I don't know. I think a lot of mine are in my top 10, but the two I know you're going to have are in my 6 to 10. They're not in my
top 10. Fair enough. Well, number five is Grown Ups, probably the laziest excuse for a movie this side of that time you made a movie in the backyard with your friends.
Yeah.
And just because you didn't have anything else to do. This seems like that movie, just
but
with
sadly, we
millions
couldn't be married
dollars.
To hot chicks in our backyard movie.
Right.
It's like, let's have Kevin James marry Maria Bello. And you're like, in what universe does that happen?
In the Kevin James universe where he marries all the hot chicks?
Yeah, what is that all about?
Anyway, but I mean, that's not even the problem with this movie. The problem with this movie is it's terribly unfunny. It feels like they let all these guys come in and write their own jokes. And it's just hard to watch.
It's like every time I think about this movie, I completely forget Chris Rock was in it. That is how little of an impact he had. I'm like, oh yeah,
right.
Chris Rock's in this
movie. And you remember that Rob Schneider's in it, and he's not funny.
No.
He hasn't been funny for a long time.
You can do it.
Anyway, number four is Jonah Hex, which aside from a very awesome first scene, is just clunky and not interesting and has weird effects that don't make any sense and poorly acted, and I'm not even talking about Megan Fox yet. I just Josh Brolin should be ashamed of himself for being in this movie. I have no idea what they were trying to do with this film.
Well, he had and a thing on his face the whole time. I think he had a bad acting prosthesis on his face.
It was like a bad luck charm prosthesis. Number three is Furry Vengeance, in which Brendan Fraser wears juicy pants and fights off dancing squirrels.
And farting skunks.
Once again, just lazy. There's nothing ambitious about it. There's nothing imaginative about it. You can make a talking animal movie and make it at least funny.
They didn't even talk, though.
As they did with Yogi Bear.
They had, like, balloons. They had thought balloons.
And it was trite. It was terribly cliched. You could see it coming a mile away, and when you figured it out, which was somewhere right after the opening credits, you were like, really? I have to sit through the rest of this to get to the punchline?
Miley Cyrus.
Makes me shiver. Number two is Cop Out, which was really, it wasn't that it just that it was bad, it was that it was offensively bad. and that it should have been so much better. I don't know how you can get Kevin Smith in a room with Bruce Willis and one of the funnier men on television, Tracy Morgan, and make such an unfunny film.
Careful, you're going to get blocked by Kevin Smith.
I know, I'm going to get ka-blocked on Twitter for this.
I got ka-blocked. Did you know that?
You did?
I'm officially blocked by Kevin Smith.
Good for you.
Yes, it's a badge of honor.
Anyway, so Cop Out is, it is. It's one of the, Kevin Smith has no idea how to shoot action. This movie's not funny. The jokes they think are going to work don't work. And it really, it feels like a just very lazily made movie. It feels like everybody showed up for their paycheck. Bruce Willis, at one point in one of the scenes when they're watching the house and watching the poop bandit go in and drop one, he just looks as an actor like he doesn't want to be there. Like he has no interest in acting alongside Tracy Morgan. So
I don't think he did.
I want to say that if that came out, turned out to be true, I'd believe it. If he really didn't want to be there, as you can tell, and those are always hard movies to watch. So, and then number one is The Last Airbender, and yet another. I was offended on behalf of people who were fans of the Avatar: The Last Airbender cartoon series, because it's great and it's got this rich story with so much complexity and nuance, and all of that was lost on the movie.
Yeah,
M. Night Shyamalan totally missed the point. And that's yet another very tough thing to watch is when you see a filmmaker make an adaptation of something and they completely miss the point of what they're adapting. Yeah. You know, Jonah Hex feels the same way. They completely miss the point of the character.
Yeah.
And the action was not good. The guy from The Daily Show was like the bad guy, Asif Manvi. No, I'm sorry. That guy needs to continue to display like gynecologists in Todd Phillips movies.
As evil gynecologists.
Yeah, he not funny. Dev Speaking Patel, of the guy from Slumdog Millionaire, his next role is as the villain in an M. Night Shyamalan movie. I'm sorry, no. That dude's not scary at all.
Ruined his career fast.
So and just the dialogue. Oh. The best part about The Last Airbender is that there are two characters that are supposed to like be falling in love through the whole movie.
Yeah.
And at the end of the movie, they like separate and you don't know that they were supposed to be falling in love.
You're just like, there they go.
Until the end when they're like, oh my God, we're so in love. And you're like, what? When did this happen? So that's the number one. That's the worst movie of the year.
You just sparked something. I know this is going back to an old discussion. You mentioned creepy gynecologist. Can I just say, this is going back to Blue Valentine. Was that not the creepiest abortionist that you've ever seen? Would you get an abortion from that guy? Do you remember him?
I'm not 100% sure I could even physically get an abortion because I'm not a lady.
Well, just in case.
And I'm not sure I'd get one anyway.
He had a big, long soul painful. Patch. Yeah, he was like he's the creepiest looking abortion doctor I've ever seen.
I'm sure there are back alley ones that are creepier.
I don't know.
It's hard to say. It really is.
He's like, okay, we're gonna do a little bit of sight. You're gonna feel some pain. Okay, can you touch my face? No. Anyways, so I'll do my worst movies of the year yet.
You ready? Yeah. Go ahead. Okay. Do your thing.
Number five is Hereafter. This is Clint Eastwood's latest attempt at Oscar. And you know what? Clint does some great movies. This is not one of them. This feels like the movie. A lot of times what he's been doing is he'll release two movies in a year and one will be really good. Like a couple years ago, he did Gran Torino and he also did The Changeling. And The Changeling sucked. and Gran Torino was really good. The year before that, it was Flags Over Fathers, which sucked, and Letters to Iwo Jima was really good. He's, I think, gotten rid of the really good movies, and now he's just doing the crap ones. Because, like, last year he did Invictus, which was boring. And this year he did Hereafter, which is, it's the most boring, boring movie ever. I mean, the performances are okay, and it's shot well. But it's just boring. I didn't care about anybody. My next one is I'm Still Here, the crocumentary by Casey Affleck and Joaquin Phoenix. And there's nobody.
What do you mean that movie wasn't real?
It wasn't real. Well, the worst part is they like announced it's not real like the day it opens.
And right. Not they didn't even give people time to be confused about it.
Yeah, it sparked no discussion because. But the other thing is, if you watch the movie, it just plays as a gag through the whole film. It doesn't play as if they're really trying to pull the wool over everybody's eyes, and nobody bought in on the joke. Nobody did. You know, I was talking to somebody earlier this week, and they're like, oh, well, the entertainment press, the gossip rags. I'm like, no, the headlines were, is this real? So they didn't even buy in on it. And as you watch the film, he's constantly saying, no, this is real. You know, and I'm like, well, if you have to then defend whether or not it's real in your own damn documentary, nobody's buying it. So
mm-hmm.
The next one is The Backup Plan with Jennifer Lopez. Did you get a chance to see this?
No, thankfully.
You're a better person because it's her getting pregnant and not acting well. And Ben Affleck's nowhere near it. But this is just a terrible, terrible film. Misses its mark as a romantic comedy, as a baby comedy. You know, it's, of course, you can tell it's trying to play off of like Knocked Up and, you know, films like that. But it's just awful. Number two, The Tourist, one of the silliest nominated films for the Golden Globe. This, to me, failed on all levels. It was not an action movie. It was not a romance. Angelina Jolie, who's a good actor, just phoned in her performance. You could tell she just wanted a trip to Venice. Johnny Depp's terrible.
And who wouldn't?
I mean, I would. You know, I don't blame these actors that are like, we're going to shoot in the most beautiful place in the world. And like, yeah, I'll do it. You're going to pay me money? Sure. But right. It's terrible. It's even like the Foley and the ADR is poorly done. And it's got like the worst ending since like the Book of Eli as being, you're just like, really? Oh my gosh, you're going there?
Hey man, Book of Eli was a good movie.
No, it wasn't. anyways.
You take that back.
It was nominated for Best Musical and Comedy. I don't know, because it's not a comedy, it's not a musical, unless I missed something. Terrible, terrible film. And then my number one film that I hated the most was Remember Me.
Nice.
Starring Robert Pattinson. And it's him trying to, Summit is trying to capitalize on his Twilight fame.
Right. And talk about one of the great WTF endings of the year.
Yeah, that was one that, well, that's the thing. I hated the movie before that because everyone's like, oh, the ending. And I'm like, no, I hated it like from frame one. I hated it from the trailer. I had to go out to my car in the middle of the movie. I almost didn't come back. I had to get something. And mm-hmm. and the people I was sitting next to, when I came back, they're like, oh, we thought you left. And I'm like, I so wanted to. But I'm like, I didn't want it to suddenly become awesome at the end. It didn't. So,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, those are my top five. Furry Vengeance and The Last Airbender are in my top 10 worst, though.
Mm-hmm.
For your thing. You know what? Can I throw down a couple real quick ones here? Because I made another list this year of the most mediocre movies of 2010.
Hey man, you can do whatever you
and I'll just mention a couple off the list, but they're ones that are like that you saw, because it just seemed like 2010 was not a strong year for movies, and it had some crap in it, but I don't think it had a disproportionate number of crap. But there's a disproportionate number of movies that you're like, oh, that was okay. You mm-hmm. know? And movies like Prince of Persia, Edge of Darkness, The American, Secretariat, the number one movie, which I think it's the new, if you say better or worse than Teen Wolf rating, the new one is Night and Day.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about a movie that aimed right for the center and hit it on the mark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not great, doesn't suck, it's just right there in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So there we go, our best and worst of the year. Should we go to a break?
I think so.
All right.
We'll be right back.
And we're wrapping you up here on Fat Guys at the Movies. Ba-boom.
I'm hungry.
One more segment to go. We've talked about our best and worst movies of the year. Kevin's lists were very interesting, to say the least. Mine were pretty much what you'd expect from me if you listen to the show.
If you followed me over the years, over the course of the year, you would not be surprised with my list.
Right. I wasn't surprised with your list. But, it was interesting because it wasn't the same list that you see from other critics, which is what makes Fat Guys the Movies sort of special.
It's sort of special. It makes us awesome, thank you very much.
I guess. Yeah. Anyway, time to move into the things we do every week, one of which being the world-famous DVD Roundup. And I only have one this week. This is a really terrible... I don't understand this. It is a week after Christmas. Everyone and their brother has a gift card for a Best Buy or a Target or another video. So anybody who likes movies got a gift card of some kind. Even I did. Got a gift card for Best Buy. And the worst week of releases that I've seen in a long time.
It's pretty bad. There's not a whole lot. There's stuff that made my list of, like, if I were to say to my top five picks when I do my DVD rundown, there's stuff that makes that list that I wouldn't exactly call a recommendation.
Right. It's just, like, oh, yeah, this came out.
This came out, and I had a chance to review it.
Right. But there is one that actually ended up in the top 10, my top 10 movies of the year, Merantau, which is a martial arts movie from Indonesia, which is one of the most fast-paced, ridiculous action flicks I've seen all year.
Is it redonkulous?
And it looks very cool. It's very redonkulous. It looks very cool in Blu-ray, so I'd recommend at least renting it if you're into... if you're into trying new things and buying it if you're into martial arts movies.
You like your martial arts movies. I've noticed that. You do.
I do. Like, I got to think for martial arts movies, and this is one of the best ones I've seen in a while.
Yeah.
So. Okay, so that's my pick.
I'm going to throw out one of my favorite ones for this week would be Archer season 1. Do you watch Archer?
Mm-hmm. I do not, but I recently got this.
Uh-huh. It's a cartoon. It's an animated film on FX, and it's basically it's a sort of a spoof on the spy genre. It's about a spy named Archer, who just gets into scrapes and shenanigans, and he's the big suave spy, and he's got these ladies, and he's got problems with people in the office. It's funny. It's cute. I have to say it is cute, and I am almost disturbingly attracted to the women in they're animated, but I'm disturbingly attracted to the ladies in the show.
Fascinating.
It's bizarre. I don't know. I'm like looking. I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm like really turned on by that. I don't know why.
Interesting.
I've shared too much. Let's move on. There's also The American, which made my list of top mediocre movies of 2010.
I actually kind of liked.
I liked it. Well, I mean, it's worth watching, but it wasn't fantastic. I enjoyed it. I didn't hate
it. It's just, it's such a slow burn.
It's a slow burn.
Oh, God.
It's got plenty of women naked in it, and that's always a plus. It's not an action movie, so if you've seen the trailers and you think it's an action movie, it's not. It's a character study about a guy who's at the eve of his years as an assassin. So,
yeah.
Well done, good performances, but entirely forgettable in a lot of ways, but I enjoyed it. There's also Resident Evil Afterlife, if you're into the Resident Evil movies.
Mm-hmm.
This one was better than the last one, Apocalypse, but not as good as the first two.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked great in 3D. I saw it in the IMAX, looked great in 3D. I don't know how well it translated. Have you had a chance to watch a 3D TV yet?
Not yet.
Okay. Because I know you have access to certain tech at times. But I'd be curious to see how this would look in 3D. I haven't had a chance to really vet the 3D television experience. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It is available in 3D on 3D Blu-ray, but I don't know how good it's going to be.
Yeah.
I can't tell.
It'll be interesting. I have not yet messed around with it.
There is also Battlestar Galactica Razor, which is
good.
A great movie. Did they not? I thought they had already released this on Blu-ray, or had they released it on HD DVD? I know they released it on DVD.
They had released it on HD DVD and DVD, and it came, I believe, as part of the full set Blu-ray, but they're just now starting to get around to like finishing out like the individual sets.
Yeah, because they got that, and I know they got season 4, the complete season 4, coming out on Blu-ray soon, because I just got that.
Right.
But Razor's a neat little movie. If you're a fan of Battlestar Galactica, I think it's the TV movie that bridges seasons 2 and 3. Am I correct on that one? And it's it just sort of tells the story of what was it, the Pegasus, which was the other battle star that then hooks up with the battle star
where Leodama goes to get fat.
Basically, that's a good movie. Check it out, especially if you're a BSG fan. I wouldn't watch it cold if you don't know anything about the show, because you'll be just completely confused. And then 12, which is Joel Schumacher's version of Havoc without Anne Hathaway's breasts.
That's really disappointing.
That's about all I can say about that movie. It has Chase Crawford in it.
Nope, doesn't do it for me.
Yeah, there you go.
Chase Crawford show his breasts?
No, he doesn't. He doesn't show anything.
See?
He's white Mike, and he's the worst he gets is in a wife beater shirt.
Nice. The stinker of the week.
Jersey Shore season 2.5 or 2.1, because it's Jersey Shore, and the sad thing is it's going to sell well.
Oh, yeah. That's the big release this week. Yeah. We just clearly don't get it.
We don't get it.
Anyway, time to wrap up reviews. We reviewed two movies this week, The King's Speech, which I said totally rocks.
And I said kind of rocks.
And Blue Valentine, which I said totally rocks as well.
And I said it sucks.
Oh, wow. Anyway, next week we got Crap in January, where we start our month-long tribute to bad movies that come into theaters and confuse us. So, in the meantime, go over to fatguysandmovies.com, hit us up on iTunes, and give us reviews and love and hate or whatever. I don't even care.
Whatever, somewhere in the middle. I kind of like you guys.
Whatever you want. You guys are anyway, have fun at the movies and don't eat the yellow snow.
We had a fun year, 2010, so looking forward to 2000.
Woohoo!